Hello, and welcome to Gilead. I'm Rebecca Anderson. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm glad you found us. On Sunday, October 2nd, 2022, my co-pastor and yours, is that how this works? My co-pastor, Vince Amlin, preached an absolute banger of a sermon to kick off our October series, Skeletons in the Closet, True Stories That Need to Be Told. We're talking shame, secrets, and shit that we're finally ready to air. Here's Vince.
One early reviewer of The Exorcist said that at his showing, the cinema's floors were so spattered with vomit, he couldn't get near the sink. Is that a good way to start a sermon? Not a good way. I just feel like everybody talks about the fainting and the heart attacks at the movie, but no one mentions all the puking. The Exorcist was only released in 24 theaters to start with. The studio expected it to flop. They dropped it on December 26th, which, yes, makes it like Die Hard, a Christmas movie. They tried to bury it, but within months, it became the highest grossing film that Warner Brothers had ever had. And the next year, it was the first horror film to ever be nominated for Best Picture. It captured people's attention. Yes, because of the puke, and the blood and the shock, but maybe also because of the dread, because of some recognition of real danger, of real horror, that unlike Dracula or Frankenstein, maybe it was possible to imagine yourself invaded by something outside yourself, taken over from something that separates you from yourself, possessed by something that leaves you feeling powerless to regain control and fighting against the very thing that could save you. When the first letter came, I wasn't in that place. The office manager at the church opened it and asked what he should do about it. A letter from a lawyer threatening a suit over copyright infringement. It said that we had used this image that belonged to a French newspaper without permission. The photo was included on page 2, and it showed a boat of Rohingyan refugees fleeing genocide in Burma. The church had recently started sponsoring a Rohingyan family, and we were raising money to resettle them in Chicago. And sure enough, we had posted that picture on the blog, encouraging people to donate. So I told the office manager, take it down and throw the letter away. It sounded like bullshit. And the same a couple months later when the second identical letter arrived and the third, I figured this was like some kind of copyright troll trying to scare people into responding. He paid someone to like send out hundreds of letters a day, and if even 1% of them responded, he was rich. But no one was going to bother to actually sue us. I wasn't going to take the bait. Until I was. At some point, the look of the letters changed. The newest one was printed on different paper and looked like some kind of official court document, full of numbers and abbreviations I didn't understand. And the cover letter stated clearly that unless we paid something like $700 immediately, they were filing suit. I had opened this one before the office manager got in that morning, and holding it in my hands there in the copy room, I broke out in a sweat. My face flushed a deep red, and something creeped into me that hadn't with the first few notices. I thought, this is real. This is bad. If people find out about this, I'm done. $700 on a tight church budget, $700 going to absolutely nothing, going to pay for a mistake that I let happen. And me, brand new here, they don't know me, they wouldn't understand. And I've just moved my family across the country to be here. What will I tell them? Where will we go? What can I do? I threw this letter away too, but not like the first few. This one I buried, slipped it into the middle of a pile where it wouldn't be read, where I wouldn't accidentally see it again when I walked by. I wanted to forget it. I hoped that if I just ignored it for a little longer, it would go away. And it didn't. Instead, these notices grew more urgent, and the dollar amount went up, and the documents looked more official, and the times that I wasn't thinking about it became fewer and farther between. It consumed me. It possessed me. It left me nauseous and full of dread. And then came the big manila envelope. As a non-lawyer, I still don't know what it all really meant, but the moment I opened it, I thought, it's too late. I let it go on too long. It looked like the lawsuit had been filed, and instead of $700, the church was now looking at thousands of dollars to defend itself in a court, and it even named the court in California. Now, instead of needing to admit that I had allowed the office manager to post a picture, I'd have to own up to letting the whole thing get totally out of control. Now I finally had to take action. Only I couldn't. I knew it couldn't wait another day longer, but I still couldn't make myself do anything about it. Something somewhere in me still knew this was bullshit. It knew what to do, to hand this over to a lawyer in our congregation and he would handle it. Something knew it must be fixable, but to fix it, I had to tell somebody. To fix it, I had to bring it out into the light of day, and that thought left me frozen, stuck, unable to do anything. I knew I couldn't throw this letter away, this packet, but I couldn't do anything else with it either. I set it down, not on top of my desk, but underneath, face down, and let it fester there. Unable to forget it and unwilling to reach out and ask for the help that could save me. The first full verses I ever translated from the Greek New Testament were the words of a demon, which, if you know anything about the University of Chicago Divinity School, is like appropriate. The professor didn't tell us what it was we were translating. She let us discover it on our own, and when I finally worked it out and read it back to myself, it gave me chills. What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Something about hearing those words in like an ancient language made them so much creepier, more real, more immediate. They're from the beginning of Mark's gospel. Actually, it's the first thing that happens after Jesus calls his disciples. He's like, I will make you fish for people. And this is the person that shows up on cast number one. Just notable seminary types. Jesus is teaching in the synagogue when this man pipes up. He says the kinds of things that demons always say in these stories. Ironically, they're consistently the ones to first name Jesus' holiness, his specialness. They know him. They know his power. And something in them knows he is the very one who could save them. So they try to keep him at bay. What have you to do with us? Did you come to destroy us? There's only one demon in this story. There are other stories with more demons, but there's only one demon in this story, so he's speaking for the man too. It's the same lie that always takes hold in this kind of situation. If I move toward healing, it will destroy me. If I let this demon out into the light of day, that's the end. And I keep saying demon, but in the story, the Greek is actually unclean spirit. And not to spook you out any further, but I opened my Greek Bible this week to check. The Greek Bible that I bought used, of course, in seminary and open about twice a year. I went to this passage this week and the words unclean spirit were underlined. And they were the only words underlined in the whole Bible. So I definitely bought a used New Testament from an exorcist. But also, like, as a cheat sheet on the back flap, they wrote the Greek alphabet out. So, like, not a very good exorcist, I think. Anyway, pneumati akatharto, unclean spirit. But that unclean part means actually a lot of different things. At its most basic, it just means a mixture. It means something bad mixed with something good. Like chaff that needs to be sifted out of the wheat. It means something that gets in the way. It can be an obstruction that blocks the flow of the river along its course, or weeds that mar an otherwise perfect field. A thing that stands between something and what it's meant to be or where it's meant to go. Even that word demon itself comes from the word for divided. Nothing that supernatural. Just something that divides us from ourselves, that gets in the way, that blocks us from reaching out for help. The skeleton that crowds our closet, the thought that threatens to destroy us, that separates us from everyone else, whispering to us, if they only knew. An idea that slips in and takes hold. The shame that can possess us and is hard to shake. To combat it, the ancient exorcism formulas are mostly just names and attributes of God. The idea being to remind the spirit or the person possessed that no matter how bad things seem, no matter how strong that idea appears, there is always one who is stronger. A truth that is bigger and more powerful than those lies, more full of love than any of us can ever be full of shame. But in this story, Jesus' formula is even simpler. Be silent and come out. Because he knows that's all it takes. A moment's rest from that demonic voice and the courage to bring it out into the light of day. To let others see it and hear its lies. That's all it takes to start to notice how small it is, how false, how little power it really has. I didn't have the courage to email that lawyer from our congregation, but I had just enough to tell Rebecca that I couldn't, that I was frozen, and to ask her if she would email him from my email address. And she would, because the thing had no power over her. She wrote it, and from the moment it was sent, it started to lose its power over me. Within a week, I was talking to this like big shot copyright attorney who assured me that it was indeed bullshit. Not that we might not get sued, but that he wasn't convinced that what we'd even done was illegal to begin with, or that any judge in America would like award damages against a church trying to raise money for refugees. And more than that, he was almost certain that a single letter from him would silence that troll on the other end for good. And it did, immediately. And it seems kind of silly now to share it with you. It seems small and insignificant. It seems melodramatic to compare it to demon possession. Maybe that's what you've been thinking for the last 10 minutes. It's fine. All that fainting and puking at the top. But that's how it is with skeletons. They're scariest while they're hidden away. They derive their power from our fear that the lies that they tell about us are true. That we are unacceptable and unlovable, that if the people around us only knew. The people around that man, when it all comes out, it's not the skeleton they're interested in. It's not even the man. It's not the demon's power they're impressed with. It's the exorcists. What is this, they ask? A new teaching with authority? They recognize the truth when they hear it. They know real power when they see it. Not whatever lie it is that separates you from yourself. Not whatever stands in the way of the help that you need or the place you were made to go. But the truth that there is one bigger and more powerful than any skeleton your closet can hold. That there is a love greater than any shame of which you are capable. And when we reach out for it, when you reach out for it, it will not destroy you. It will make you whole.